This is Future Water, where we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. I am Reese Tisdale, and today it's all about workforce disruption and the potential for growth of third-party services in water, whether it be plant management and operations and maintenance to digital. So to do so, I'm going to be joined by Eric Bendler, Research Director of Bluefield, who you've heard from in the past, and first-time podcaster Isabel Kesman, an analyst at Bluefield. And we're going to be kicking around some ideas about perspectives on what's happening, not only in the water sector, but also it's related to a recently published AWWA report that points to some numbers from and perspectives from utilities and what they're thinking. So with that, I wanted to point out a couple things that may be worth your while. One, just a recommendation, sign up for the Waterline newsletter. To do that, you can go to bluefieldresearch.com, take less than 1 minute. And what does that mean? Every Wednesday, you're going to get an update, one of two or three curated news items that our team of analysts has uncovered over the week. You'll get offers for discounts, such as a 50% off report discount for all Bluefield reports that are on sale. I think that's good through the end of this month, sort of end of the year deal. So let's make it happen. If you got any extra dollars in your pockets, now's your chance to get a 2-for-1 if you want. And then lastly, I wanted to point out, you know, it's just a reminder that we're putting on for some clients and prospects, we're putting on a webcast next week that might be of interest. And if you're interested in webcasts and you're interested in five things that are impacting the water industry, globally speaking, then I think it might be interesting to hear from our team of analysts, whether it be Greg Goodwin, Eric Bendler, Chloe Meyer, and John Berryman. They'll be talking about that with some data-backed exhibits and charts that might be of value to you and your colleagues. So we do these frequently. I'm going to say we do them about every 2 months, depending on the holidays and such, but it's a good opportunity. So rather than belabor the conversation, let's get to it with Eric Bendler and Isabel Kesman. All right. So I am joined here today by Eric Bendler, Research Director at Bluefield, and Isabel Kesman, an analyst at Bluefield as well. Guys, how's it going? Eric, what's up with you in Chicago?
Things are good. It's webcast season, so just getting ready for a bunch of webcasts, client presentations to close out the year.
I know it feels like we've gone straight from like a consulting run of back to back to back to back, and now it's webcast series, not only our own, but also for clients as well. So that'll be interesting. I mean, I guess I should say anybody who's listening who's a client and you want us to do a webcast with you, we're happy to do it.
Shot myself in the foot there.
Exactly. Isabel, what's up with you? How are things?
Hey, Reese. I'm excited to join my first Bluefield podcast. And I'm back in Boston after the holidays, just settling back in. So things are going well.
Nice. All right. So let's get to this. So Eric, this is something that actually you brought to our attention, whether it be a couple weeks ago. And it was or is an AWWA report. And they've done a survey looking at the impacts of COVID on the water utility landscape, specifically the impacts on or of workforce disruption, broadly speaking, and supply chain. So why don't you give us a little bit of background and then we can jump into the details and talk through what our thoughts are on it and how we see its impacts on the market.
Yeah. So the AWWA, you know, American Water Works Association, big kind of North American, you know, water industry association, they do this big annual report. And I think we did a podcast on their last big annual state of the water industry report a couple months back, but they've also during COVID, they've been doing these more regular kind of really quick surveys, just pulse of the market, what's going on with utilities in dealing with COVID. And, you know, at the beginning, it was about revenue disruption and you know, absenteeism and stuff like that. The one that they just put out in October was more focused on, as you said, kind of the workforce impacts. And it's really interesting because I think for all of us that have just been kind of following the news, reading about the state of the economy more broadly, there's a lot of talk about the Great Resignation, about the tightness in the labor market. But it's really interesting to actually have some stats for how that's playing out in the utility sector. So just to give you a couple high level points that I think we'll get into, you know, I think one of the biggest takeaway for me was that of the, you know, 400 something utilities that they surveyed, 40% said that they're currently facing difficulty hiring, and 26% are expecting those challenges to continue into 2022. And if you look at the breakdown of positions where utilities are struggling the most to bring people on staff or to keep people on staff, it's really these like high skill kind of mission critical positions like treatment plant operators, service technicians, commercial drivers, mechanics, engineers that are the, kind of the most challenging. And, you know, it's kind of a eye opening to see that the amount of, you know, trouble that utilities are having kind of keeping these key positions on staff. The other big picture stat to throw out there is just in terms of utility turnover, you know, about 21% of the utilities that they surveyed are having trouble or reporting higher turnover, whereas it was only about 11% earlier in the year that we're seeing that. So we are seeing this increase in utilities that are dealing with, you know, higher than normal turnover rates.
Yeah, and I think that parallels, and I think even the report said this, they're facing similar conditions that we're reading about in the paper every day. And I think, you know, the collateral impacts are actually go well beyond this, which maybe I'll dig into in a little bit. But I guess the follow-up to that is we have been talking about workforce challenges at the utilities for a while. I mean, even before COVID came this way, there were questions about high retirement rates and sort of what that looked like. And we look at it on we go through the Bureau of Labor Statistics frequently, even have dashboards up looking at sort of utility workforces and what the employment rates look like. So back to this, what's different about this situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that you're absolutely right that this isn't necessarily new. And there's even this term for it that, you know, gets kicked around at conferences sometimes, which is the silver tsunami, right? This massive wave of expected retirements in the utility sector. You know, one data point that jumps out is this Brookings Institution study from 2018. They mentioned that, you know, about 10.5% of water sector workers would be either retiring or at least transferring out of the industry between 2016 and 2026. So 10% a year is a pretty big number. And, you know, we've heard anecdotally of utilities that are expecting, you know, half of their staff to retire in a 5-year period. So pretty big impacts. And that was obviously the trend prior to COVID, as you said. But I think what we're seeing is that the, you know, COVID itself, and then also this more recent kind of labor market tightness, they seem to just be making things even worse in the short term, right? You know, on the one hand, the pandemic forced a lot of older workers that were kind of maybe already on the verge of retirement to just exit the labor force, right? That just wasn't worth it to, especially in, you know, high risk occupations where they had a higher chance of exposure to COVID. They're in that older age bracket. It doesn't make sense to put yourself in that position. So they, you know, they're kind of just deciding to exit the labor force, maybe in higher numbers than they would have otherwise. But we're also seeing, maybe more recently, we're seeing these kind of mid-career employees that are, you know, taking advantage of the tight labor market to look for new opportunities, to look for better opportunities, look for better pay. Maybe they're reconsidering, you know, their kind of personal and professional priorities as a result of the pandemic. And so they're also changing jobs in droves, right? And just to throw a couple stats out around this, there's a, you know, Pew study that came out a couple months ago on baby boomers, right? More, you know, and this is not water sector specific, but just, you know, in the US economy in general, there's about 1 million to 1.5 million more baby boomers that retired during the pandemic than you know, in any other year, right? So just that's, you know, a higher number of workers in that age bracket leaving the labor force than we've seen in any year prior that aren't coming back, right? That's, you know, 1 million to 1.5 million people that are just aren't coming back to the labor force. And then the mid-career employees, that kind of great resignation group, their resignation or their job turnover rates are up more than 20% than average levels, right? So again, a really big shift in people kind of changing jobs. And, you know, I think obviously for any kind of organization that means, especially if you're talking about, you know, late career, mid-career employees. That's a lot of institutional knowledge that's going out the door, a lot of expertise that's going out the door. And the water sector in particular, you know, does tend to have a slightly older workforce on average than kind of the national workforce as a whole. And so that's potentially even a greater deal of impact there. And then maybe just the last point on some of the reasons behind all of this that the AWWA survey gets into would be vaccine mandates. You know, we talked about this on a previous podcast as well. So according to the AWWA survey, there's only about 12% of the utilities surveyed do have some kind of a vaccine mandate in place or planning to start one. And about half of those with those mandates do expect that it's going to have an effect on workforce levels, though most think that it'll be a pretty minor impact. But that could, you know, it's probably not the main reason, but it is one potential driver for some of the higher levels of turnover and resignations that we're seeing.
Like, I guess one of the things that's not on the list, though, is, I mean, even we at Bluefield are going through, it's like, well, when are people coming to the office? You know, the water utilities, they are very localized, but also what's the requirements, plurally, for workers to come into the workplace, right? Are they, you know, if you're a knowledge worker and you can do it remotely, that's one thing. But if you're being forced to come in, then it's like, well, hey, I don't want to do this anymore because I sure did enjoy those couple months where I didn't. And I'm looking for now an opportunity that I don't have to do that. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. And to your point, I think that the other thing when it comes to the great resignation is, you know, when we look back at the last recession, the economy was terrible, right? And so retirement benefits and all the underlying financial ballast was not good, right? And so it's hard to say, hey, the economy's in the tank, my retirement benefits have gone down the tube, so I'm going to quit my job now. Whereas now, this go around, it's a totally different story. The economy, at least the stock market, which is not the economy, but it's where a lot of retirement benefits are, is incredibly strong. So if you're confident that, you know, the market and all your investments are going to continue to climb, irrespective of COVID or other, you know, economic issues, then the hell with it, right? Why not pull the plug and go find something else? Or just if you're older like me, you just pull the plug and say, see ya. All right. Well, Isabel, let's bring you into this conversation because, you know, part of this discussion and one of the reasons we're talking about it today is Eric and I had a conversation a week or two ago, and it could have been related to this, but it's also really, I think, if I recall, a couple other things, but it's the role of the workforce and what does that mean for third-party O&M services? Because if a utility doesn't have the workforce to operate and maintain their system, then they're likely are going to have to look elsewhere. And you've been doing a lot of research in this area, having just released a report, I think, just a couple of days ago. So third-party O&M, we're anticipating it to grow over the next decade, which is kind of indicative of a lot of deals that we've been seeing as well. I know there's been a lot of big deals. So why don't you give us a little bit of background of the O&M market and what you've been seeing just to frame it?
Yeah, so based on what Eric just shared with us about utility labor challenges and what you just mentioned, utilities are going to be looking for solutions and weighing several different options, one of which could be to outsource the operation and maintenance, which we call O&M, of their water and wastewater systems to a third-party service provider. So in other words, the utility or municipality would still be the owner of their system, but would pay a company that does have readily available trained staff to handle the daily system upkeep and maintenance. And right now, we estimate around 38 million or 12% of Americans currently receiving water or wastewater services through systems that have an O&M contractor. And so as Reese mentioned, we recently released a report specific to O&M, and that's based on a database from 1970s through present day of over 2,000 or so O&M contracts. And we've used these contracts to determine outsourcing trends over time. And basically, we've seen steady growth over this over the past two decades at around 6% compound annual growth rate. And we've estimated the market to be around US $2.6 billion in annual spending by utilities. And as Reese also mentioned, we're expecting this market to expand. And this is not only because of workforce disruptions that we discussed earlier, but also there's just an overall greater need for more advanced treatment solutions, management solutions, especially as it relates to digitalizations, emerging contaminants like PFAS, and aging wastewater and water assets.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it's probably, you know, workforce disruption, like you said, but also, you know, the regulatory environment. What we're looking at, you know, 50,000 just water systems alone. There are a lot of systems out there that have to be managed. A lot of them are really small. And I think, I mean, why don't we talk a little bit about that, sort of the size of these systems. So we've looked at, we've got a database, 2,000 or so contracts. One interesting part was that the AWWA report said that, you know, the biggest impact of COVID is on large utilities. Now, let's set that question aside of why that is for a second. But when we look at our data of the third-party service providers, how does that analysis or how does the data break down when it comes to size?
Right. So we looked at contract trends across several different population segments. And our data shows that active contracts in the 10K to 50K population segment makes up a disproportionate share of the market, which is actually pretty interesting because it tells us there's a bit of a market sweet spot for contracts serving this population range specifically. Right now, we're seeing about 2,000 or so active contracts at this range, and they're accounting for nearly a fourth of that US $2.6 billion value I mentioned earlier. And I guess to put this into perspective a little bit, there's less than 10 active contracts in our database that serve more than 1 million people. But these major contracts also represent a fourth of that 2.6 billion. And that's just due to the sheer dollar value attached to each of those contracts compared to the smaller ones.
Yeah. So I would say, yeah, on the dollar, did you say 2000 or 200?
200. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah. So, but I, like you said, on a nominal basis, at least number of contracts, it makes up a good chunk of those. And the large ones, those are the big, could be Los Angeles or DC. I don't know exactly where they are. You'd know better than I. But, you know, on a dollar basis, they make up a big chunk and it's just a small number of contracts. So let's talk about the size for a second. And I don't have the answer. Is there any reason why you think that large utilities may be reporting to be the most impacted in the survey?
Yeah, so I also don't have an exact answer on this, but there's several possible reasons. The first being, I mean, it could just be the sample size from the survey. Another could be that larger utilities are based in urban environments, and we saw people fleeing cities during the height of the pandemic. So that could have impacted the operations. And then the last being that larger utilities have greater scale of operations and are just overall more complex, which in a way speaks to why those mid-sized contracts are so ideal, in that they likely represent a strong balance between scale and complexity that, you know, benefits the utility and the third-party provider.
Yeah, I think, you know, and to that point, speaking of complexity, and Eric, maybe we can talk about this in a minute, but one point that's come up recently, I feel like we had a conversation, whether it be on this podcast or some other time, was just about just like data scientists, right? That's a complex, what I would call a complex skill set that a utility needs to use. And finding data scientists is not easy these days. One, there's high demand for them. They're really expensive. That's maybe another reason for that as well. And that happens in the larger systems, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're stealing my thunder a little bit, but
no, it's okay. Well, I tell you what, let's save that for a second.
Okay.
Well, Why? Because I want to keep talking to Isabel about the O&M service providers, honestly. So one thing, Isabel, is lastly, in the report, we do is we look at all these contracts. Part of it is like, and it is impacted by workforce, really unions specifically. Do we see any trends or anything that we think that may be shaping third-party service provider activity by region or by state?
Yeah, so unions can definitely have an impact in some states, although union representation across most of the country is less than 10%. And the majority of states, 27 exactly, have right-to-work statutes, and those just help minimize unionization and limit it as an obstacle to O&M outsourcing. All that being said, the Northeast, Midwest, and the West have higher union penetration rates than the South and Rocky Mountain states, for example, where those percentages are much lower and make outsourcing not only easier, but more likely.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why, you know, I being from the South, you know, in South Carolina, that's why we have a bunch of auto manufacturers and companies like Boeing that are there because they're right to work states. But all right, Eric, let's, now I do want to follow up with you because I did, prior to getting onto this conversation, I did tell you that I was going to ask you about digital water and sort of how does all of this impact digital water? So let's do it. So lay it out for me. How's workforce disruption or even how does this survey, what does it tell us about its impact on digital water?
Yeah, so I have a lot of respect for the AWWA and the surveys that they've done. I think they've been a really good source of information throughout the pandemic, but I do think it's maybe fair to say that they've got a little bit of a blind spot or less of a focus on kind of the digital side of things and the impact. And we've actually talked about that on previous podcasts as well. You know, they've got their list of positions that utilities are having trouble hiring for, but you know, they don't seem to be asking about any of those kind of like digital or IT types of positions, like, you know, IT professionals, business systems analysts, data scientists. That's not really one of the options on the survey, but I do think that that's also a place where we, you know, maybe more anecdotally are hearing about utilities really struggling to kind of attract and retain talent. And it is a really important consideration as more utilities are kind of undergoing this digital transformation. And so there are a couple of reasons why I think in particular, these types of skill sets are going to be tough for utilities in this environment. You know, for one thing, the pay rate is drastically different. You know, I've been going through the BLS data this morning, the Bureau of Labor Statistics data this morning. And, you know, on average, a data scientist, for example, makes fully twice as much as a water wastewater plant operator, you know, and water wastewater plant operators are not at the bottom of the food chain at the utility either, right? So it's a really big difference in pay scale. Data scientists also, you know, wages have risen about twice as quickly over the past 10 years. So it is a high growth, really, really high in demand skill set. You know, I think also in terms of this great resignation conversation, you know, another big part of it, especially for kind of the tech sector, for knowledge sector workers, is that flexibility that workers have had during the pandemic with so many people working from home. You know, a lot of those types of positions that, you know, can really do their job from anywhere, they've really shown a proclivity for, you know, for either working from home on a permanent basis or for kind of being digital nomads, right? For kind of traveling around and working wherever the open road takes them. I mean, we've even had a couple of those at Bluefield, right? And, you know, so I think it's a really different work arrangement than the utility sector in particular is used to. And it's tough to sustain that at a utility because a utility is such a local business. It's rooted in local communities, local infrastructure. You really need those boots on the ground. You can't do a lot of it over Zoom or Teams. And they've kind of had to during the pandemic, but I think it's tough to sustain that long-term. And, you know, the AWWA survey really points to that. You know, another really great data point in that survey is that, you know, nearly 70% of the utilities surveyed had in the past, you know, during COVID implemented some kind of remote work policy, but now only about 9% have actually made that permanent or some sort of hybrid working arrangement, at least another 21% are considering it. So really big shift back towards getting everybody in the office. And I think that is, again, contributing to, along with the wage differences, really contributing to that disadvantage that utilities have in kind of attracting and retaining that top tier technology talent.
I think it's what's interesting, and it's adjacent to this conversation, but the other factor is when you talk about paying employees, and I'm shooting from the hip here a little bit, and that is, if everybody's working from home, there's this whole discussion about, you know, the degradation of commercial demand for employees, right? So offices in the city, you know, if people are working from home, even if they're working from in the office 3 days a week as opposed to, you know, 5 days a week, well, that's a 40% reduction in demand on commercial space during the week, right? So that means that all these people, what no matter what they do, if they're living, if they're out in their house in the suburbs, this is something we've brought up in the past, is, well, water revenues in the city or wherever those offices are could go down over the long term, because they're just not, I think it's having a bigger impact than anybody really realizes. There's been, it's not a net reduction, it's, but it definitely is being, it is the location of the demand is changing, right? I don't know if we've seen a little, some studies on that. There were some early days, I think Reftelis had put something out on revenue reductions on utilities, but I don't think it's showing to not be as bad. I'm just thinking longer term. I mean, also thinking about Bluefield, right? You know, we have an office. How many people are in here on any given day? So really, how much one space do we need? But where should that space or office be? But there, that's a ultimately a big impact. And so if revenues are down, depending on where they are, and then they have less money to pay people, right? It's just like the vicious cycle. So, or death spiral potentially. So back to you for a second though, Eric, instead of hearing me drone on about this, what does this mean for digital solutions providers?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's, you know, the really interesting wrinkle here. So kind of similar to what Isabel was saying with those O&M services providers, you know, if utilities are having trouble bringing their own internal digital talent on board or retaining that talent, and they need digital services, they're going to need to look to third-party providers. And so that could be, you know, SCADA integrators, GIS integrators, digital leakage management service providers, you know, cybersecurity professionals. And even some of this, we're seeing more kind of demand for just high-level like tech strategy or IT consulting. And so I think, you know, we're going to continue to see increased demand in that area. And it's been interesting to see as well, kind of in parallel with all these shifts on the M&A side of the house. You know, we also obviously track M&A in the water industry, especially, you know, or specifically in digital water. And what I've been seeing is this massive uptick in M&A deals, which target digital services providers. So, you know, in 2015, for example, only about 20% of the deals we tracked, or 20% of the target companies had some sort of a service component to their business. In 2020, it was about 50%. So from 20% to 50%, pretty big jump in the number of those types of companies that are getting bought up. And the buyers are really interesting too. You've got everything from engineering firms like Tetra Tech, O&M service providers, to Isabel's point, like, you know, Infomark just bought a SCADA integrator maybe a month or two ago. Private equity firms like Warren Equity, even software companies like Bentley, for example, are actually buying services companies to kind of extend into to that side of the business and kind of help drive demand for their products. So that's one piece of it, I think, certainly on the services business. But I think it also, this lack of in-house tech talent for utilities is also potentially driving more demand for these kind of service-based digital business models, right? Like software as a service, data as a service, remote monitoring as a service, where the utility has kind of less risk, less responsibility for actually operating or maintaining technology. They're just kind of paying for whatever outcomes they need, and the vendor is taking on more of the actual kind of day-to-day work.
So I want to freewheel a little bit here, but Isabel, we just did something on Infomark, did we not, on acquisitions? Am I imagining that? Was that in the quarterly?
Right.
So New Mountain Capital acquired Infomark, and then Infomark acquired
Environmental Development Partners, I believe, out in Texas.
Right. They're quite environmental. And then they also acquired ESG. But then, to Eric's point, then soon thereafter, they acquired
MR Systems, I think, right?
MR Systems, which is really that SCADA. And there's actually an interesting match there, right? I mean, at least that was in the analysis that we talked about, was, well, O&M service, there's sort of an economies of scale approach, right? Where it's very regional or local. And you sort of, as I was sort of talking to you guys, where it's like, you just put a pin in the map and then you draw a radius around it and say, look, this is where we can get the most benefits in SCADA system services and solutions. It's kind of a similar idea, right? And there's definite overlap, I think, though I do know that Infomarket said they were going to keep MR separately, but I think the expectation is they're probably going to be buying more of these as they move beyond sort of the Southeast, if in fact they do that. So, well, look, guys, thanks for all the insights, but before we jump off, why don't you, Isabel, we'll start with you. Why don't you tell us what you're working on?
Right now, I am wrapping up the Private Water Quarterly, looking at Q3 mergers and acquisitions, especially among the investor-owned utilities and the financials of the IOUs.
So I know, because I've seen at least a draft of it, it looks like we're at 151 deals for this year. Is that the number where we are?
Yep, we're at 151 deals at the end of, since I wrote the quarterly, that does include some Q4 deals technically, but that's already the same amount that we had by the end of Q4 for 2020. So by the end of Q4, expecting a large uptick in that record number.
Yeah, so this will be the highest, I mean, I think without a doubt, it'll be the highest number we've recorded since we really started nailing it down. You know, 2014, 2015. So cool. So Eric, what about you?
Also working on our digital quarterly. I think we're seeing potentially similar things on the M&A side for digital. We're also looking at some really interesting, you know, policy developments, project developments. So that'll be a good one. We are also going to be doing a research note on kind of some of the themes that we just touched on about the service, the digital services landscape, some of the M&A that we've seen, and how it fits into this kind of broader workforce trend. So I think, you know, a lot of the same points we'll be kind of fleshing out with some of the data that we've been pulling together. And then global forecasts perpetually.
Oh man, global forecasts. It keeps on going. So, all right, guys, why don't I take more of your time? So thanks a million for jumping on and appreciate it. And Isabel, good job on the first Future Water podcast.
Thanks, Reese.
Thanks a lot, Reese.
All right, guys, take care. All right, this is Future Water. If you have any questions or comments or ideas for topics going forward, we're always happy to discuss them. All you have to do is let us know at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. And before we sign off, as always, one, please subscribe, give us a review on Apple, but also you can subscribe on Spotify as well or a lot of other podcast platforms. Send us a note with any ideas, like I said and asked. And lastly, tell a friend about it. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Until we talk again, be well, be safe. Take care.